And Henry David Thoreau says in his conclusion to Walden, when one walks confidently in the direction of his dreams, he will pass a certain boundary. He will experience a success unexpected in common hours. The laws that apply to him will be expanded, or new laws will be made in his favor, and he will live with the license of a higher order of beings. This is a key quote for understanding. It's a different ball game. There's new laws.
Welcome to In Search of the New Compassionate Male. My name is Clay Boykin. I support this podcast through my coaching practice. I help people visualize and harmonize, find direction and meaning, or simply get unstuck. Contact me at clayboykin.com for a free consultation. Now here's the latest episode of In Search of the New Compassionate Male.
Hello world, it's me, Dennis, and we are in search of the new compassionate male. I'm the co-host of this particular podcast, and I'm here with the founder of In Search of the New Compassionate Male, Clay Boykin. Hi, Clay.
Hi, Dennis. This is a very special day. Today we have Connie Baxter Marlowe and Andrew Cameron Bailey with us. And yes, they have a wonderful background. We're going to talk, overarching conversation is going to be on the trust frequency. And I've always wondered, is it possible to change our mind? You know, is it possible to think differently? And I think we're going to speak about some of that today. So welcome, Connie, and welcome, Andrew.
Oh, so glad to have you all here. You know, one of the things when I began my study of quantum physics, and from an amateur level, but I began to be curious about quantum consciousness, about what that might be like, because what I pay attention to grows, and how that works, and how that might relate. And then when I heard one of your YouTubes and I heard you talking about that, I was very excited about how this might work, because we all exhibit a frequency, and then how that works together. So it's exciting for me to be able to hear from you and hear from what your research and your studies and your practicality has been.
Well, it's great to be here. We're thrilled to be talking about the trust frequency and our book, The Trust Frequency, 10 Assumptions for a New Paradigm.
Yes.
So talk about changing your mind, change your assumptions, and the world changes with you.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Oh, darn it.
Exactly. So you guys are so much speaking our language in so many ways that I'm expecting you to say things that are, and you do, but they're subtly different, such as, when Connie and I got together in 2003, one of the first things we did was we went to Africa and got together with the Bushmen of the Kalahari, those amazing little people from the film The Gods Must Be Crazy.
Oh, yes. Gosh.
And made this movie. And the title of the movie is In Search of the Future.
What do the wise ones
what
know?
What do the wise ones know? But in search of something. So you're in search of the compassionate male, in search of the future.
It has been said that humanity is about to undergo a major transformation, a major paradigm shift, or a quantum leap in consciousness. And looking around and reading the news, I think that's a very good idea.
And so our technique for seeking the future was to go to the world's oldest people and sit down with the oldest members of those communities and ask them these questions. We didn't even have language in common. And it's a beautiful film in search of the future.
Yeah, and we'd come in contact with so many visionary elders prior to that, that we went to our friends, because I saw through the visionary elders who came into my life when I was seeking the missing pieces of the paradigm, because I felt that our paradigm was out of balance, that it had holes in it. It couldn't explain paranormal. It couldn't explain things. I'm like, I'm not basing my life on a paradigm that can't explain things. So I went in seeking the missing pieces. And what happened was I went to Europe looking for them, and all I saw was the same kind of thinking. And then visionary elders started coming into my life, Native American elders. And I saw through them an expanded paradigm, a conscious, loving universe. So this film came out of that. And Andrew had spent an extensive time with elders and various Native people, and especially the Bushmen.
I think you have to. If you're going to go in search of human consciousness, you need to do the best you can to find the wise ones, as we call them, capital W, capital O.
Yes.
The wise ones. Who are the wise ones? Where do you find them? And what do they say? You know? And listen, and listen, and listen, and put it to practice in your personal life.
Heading out with the in search of is such a powerful way to go about it. For us, it's been, and for me, when that came up was, you know, I'm not the expert. I'm not going to go out there and tell everybody who the compassionate male is. I'm in search of.
Right.
And it's so much the same for you. It's a seeking, and it's inviting for people to come in and to join you in that search. So that's wonderful.
And it's a searching without and within.
Yes.
It has to be both. It has to be bidirectional, omnidirectional, or I'm missing things. And that's what I love about, because that's what I love about your practice. And especially being, I'm 74, so I'm getting a chance to experience the elderhood and experience this time in my life, and to learn that, boy, the sales pitch about aging is all wrong. I am having the time of my life. I'm learning more. I'm growing more. I'm more excited. I'm making more mistakes. I'm growing. I mean, look, I get to be here today with you.
And don't tell Clay, but life begins at 70.
He's going to get there. He's hanging in there. He's just come on and listen to your elders here, Clay.
Well, I just celebrated my 68th birthday, for the record.
All right. And he's getting it.
It was my 78th, and it was Connie's 75th.
Congratulations. Now you had, when we're talking about the elder, because there's so much about what I've learned about science and like I look back, and when I read the Bible and I look at the miracles, and it looks to me like Jesus is using quantum principles. He's using the principles of entanglement, and he's using so much of what we're talking about with the elders is that we're actually remembering rather than discovering anew.
I would say Jesus was a way shower into this frequency that we call the trust frequency. And our 10 assumptions for new paradigm bring people a construct on the nature of the universe that takes us beyond duality. Okay, it's a huge leap to get your vibration level up to that level beyond right and wrong, good and evil, that there's only love. And what we say is we just don't understand the nature of that love, which is unconditional, mm-hmm. which means it gives us everything we ask for. And then what are our requests? Well, our requests are our vibration. And we say it's our consciousness. And we have 7 aspects of our consciousness that determine our frequency and vibration, and thereby our reality. So that's what we're bringing to the table.
It's wonderful. I got a question, because when I hear the title of the book, The Trust Frequency, when I think of trust, I think of my trust in another person. But you're using trust in a much bigger way. Can you talk about that some?
Let me put it in 4 words. Trust the loving universe.
Okay.
Go there. It's big. It's as big as it gets.
Because there's only love. In this construct that we're bringing forth, mm-hmm. this unconditional loving nature of the universe that loves us so much, it gives us everything we ask for. But what are our requests? And what was our overarching act of free will when we incarnated that gave the loving universe permission to take us on our journey to wholeness.
To put us through hell sometimes.
To put us through hell sometimes. On our journey to wholeness, which is our journey to self-love and self-acceptance and alignment with our divinity and our purpose. So it's huge. And this is the basis of our course. We have an online course called The Dance of Souls that applies these principles to our relationships, because then we become the beneficiary as opposed to the victim. We get out of victim consciousness. We realize that we gave an overarching act of free will to go on this journey.
When you set out to design a course, can you take us back to when it was just the germ of an idea, when you were sitting together and saying, you know, we need to, this might be, make a course, and how you went about this process of creation and the evolution into what it is today?
So very personal on Connie's part.
Yeah.
Her relationship with your daughters, yeah?
No, well, my daughters, my father, my husband, my life journey. Mm-hmm. I saw that because of the trust frequency, I live in that place. So that this construct is my reality. Absolutely. Okay.
Yes.
No doubt. I have no doubt. Okay. So, I mean, doubt's the Achilles heel to getting to this frequency. So I saw through three generations of behaviors that there was a pattern in my life, not me blaming them, mm-hmm. but I had work to do. And that's what this course is about. It's about going inside and seeing the work we have to do to come to self-love, to accept those parts of ourselves we don't love yet. So this course just came about like, okay, we don't want to do a trust, whole big trust frequency course. So let's do this little course.
This applied trust frequency to actually put it into effect. I observed this evolve in its present form through you, darling, with observing your daughters and that often tough relationship that they had. And then you wrote something about to each of them to say, look what's going on here. See this? It's your souls. It's the dance of souls. That's the way I remember it.
Yeah, absolutely. I forgot.
Right?
And Andrew and I have been in our dance of souls big time. I mean, we're in our 70s, and we've both been very conscious for decades.
And we worked all the stuff out with our previous partners, those good folks we call our spice, which is the plural of spouse.
Nice.
And
we thought we had.
And here we are, baggage free on this perfect relationship.
No.
Yeah, that's I love that because
I wouldn't say that.
Well, what I love about relationship is relationships teach me so much about me.
Exactly. It is the purpose, perhaps.
Absolutely.
And that's
with a capital A.
I love your concept of the universe, because I also find out that the universe, one of my teachers told me, he said, the universe has only one answer to every question. And that's yes.
Yes.
I'm small. Everything's so hard. Yes.
Oh, beautiful. Right. It gives us what we ask for.
Anything it asks, it loves me so much, it will give me whatever I ask. So then I have to, it takes me out of my victimhood and says, I must ask a better question.
Wow. Well, there you are.
Because if we're asking the question, am I a complete moron? What's the answer?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, because people will come into your life to show you what a moron you are.
So think about your question.
Because your soul actually magnetizes the behavior of others.
Yes.
Actually creates the other behavior in the others so that we can see those moron parts that we feel are morons.
Yes.
Will it actually even flip something they say to take it in as them calling us a moron?
It is. It is amazing because I go ahead, Clay.
Okay, so I want to try something here. So you're talking about the universe saying yes, and in our present life, in our relationships. And you said something earlier that triggered in me generational healing. And I think that's what you were referring to. And so, like right now, there's four of us. All the generations behind us are sitting with us and are speaking through us. And so that generational healing is one part of it. And then being able to show up with a knowing that the truth is that the universe loves us. And that's how we show up with one another. There's two big things we got to do there.
Well, not only the universe loves us, but we are magnificent aspects of the divine.
Amen.
And Nelly by the door, here I am, all of me, not just the parts I think you want to see, because then I'm a good girl and I'm smart and I get along, etc. But all the while, underneath, I'm saying, oh, she's stupid and she's, you know, this is fake and everything.
You
so
only
those
knew.
Parts we get. We have bring the whole of us. That's what our course is for, is to bring people into loving all of themselves, understanding that we came on this journey and getting out of victim.
Right.
And beneficiary and beloved.
And would it be true to say that when you talk about victim, my mind went to fear?
There you go. So fear is actually the opposite of trust.
Yes.
And they can't really live in the same room. So if you're in trust, the fear goes away. And if you're in fear, the trust goes away. Ooh, so you might as well make the choice of, you know, in the direction of trust.
Right.
Yeah. And one of the things I want to ask you about, because I want to go back to this word doubt that you were talking about, because I don't like being this way, but I am at times a binary thinker that I can think of, okay, how can I be doubtless? And so what I try to think of it, and it, would this work on a continuum that it is either full trust or doubt, but I can be somewhere on the continuum that I can move toward trust. Can you help me with that?
Well, change your assumptions.
Please help me.
And the world changes with you.
That's exactly what I'm asking.
There you go.
So our construct, and we're just saying this is a construct on the nature of the universe. We're not saying it's absolutely true. Mm-hmm. We're saying take it as absolutely true.
And see what happens.
And see what happens. And then your mind can align with your heart, and you can act from that place. Because one has a construct on the nature of the universe that goes beyond duality.
And it's a practice. So
and it's
you
a
can
practice.
Be along that.
Thank you. That's it. So that's this is true. When in the recovery movement, when they talk about act as if. This is
fake it till you make it.
Well, and what I've come to realize is how much of my life I spent disaster planning. You know, well, what if this doesn't work? And what if this doesn't happen? Anticipating failure, so I'm bringing failure.
You're creating it because our minds are unbelievably powerful. And if we put our attention on failure, guess what?
Right.
We're not going to make it.
And Andrew raised his kids. He taught them, don't have a fallback position.
Or you're going to fall back. So right. What is it you want to do? Oh, you want to be a rock star? You want to make your living doing your music? Do that.
Amen. And
people will say, no, but get a degree in accounting just in case that doesn't work out. Uh-huh. Nope.
Right. Well, and to add to that, you know, I found that I wasn't prepared for success because I was planning for failure.
You put your focus on failure.
Right.
And what if? And all of those fear-based cogitations that we indulge in, and the more time and energy we put there, the more powerful we create precisely that. So it's really about what we believe. It's about our worldview. It's about our fundamental assumptions, those aspects of reality that we have no doubts. So back to the doubt word. An assumption is something that we believe to be true without question. Mm-hmm. So if my fundamental assumption is I'm not good enough because my dad smacked me when I was 3 years old and I had my hand in the cookie jar, And he said, "You little shit." I guess I can say that. I'm
absolutely
right. And I put that deep in my soul. And now I am 60 years old, and I'm still behaving from that wound that I received back then, because I have this really deep, hidden, subterranean assumption that I'm not good enough. I'm a little shit.
Yep.
Connie asked my mom, my beloved, beautiful mom, when my mom was about 90 in South Africa. She said, "What was Andrew like as a little boy?" What did she say?
"He was a little devil."
And can you imagine that my parents abstained from telling me that? So I was programmed as a little boy to believe that I was a little devil. That means bad, I think. Yep. I mean,
sure,
you could make a career of that, but
with this course and this understanding, he incarnated to those parents. His soul asked his parents to say that. He took on that wound because he came in feeling like a little devil. He wasn't good enough. So he had to, it's a whole lifetime process of free will and a conscious loving universe taking us on this journey to wholeness and self-love and self-acceptance.
Which is what your course is all about.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the course is very specifically about relationships. So this relationship here, a marriage.
Yes.
Man-woman relationship is one of the types of relationships that we humans, we all have. I have a relationship with myself.
Yes.
There's ultimately only one relationship, and that's my relationship with the universe, except there's no such thing. There's no separation. That implies that I am separate from the universe. So actually, the only relationship there is the relationship of the universe with itself and each of its countless manifestations, of which we are each one. But this one is specifically to do with human relationships, whether it's a partner, a lover, a child, a parent, a boss.
The universe, circumstance.
But the universe is taking it to that highest level. The course is very practical. It's very grounding or grounded. I would say that it's extremely useful to anybody in the psychotherapeutic or counseling world, marriage counseling, just to take an example.
On either side of it, right? On either, whether you are in, right. Whether you are a therapist or whether or not you are a someone who is seeking counseling.
Well, think of a therapist, though, who has this in his or her toolbox. Here's a technique. Mm-hmm. Hey, Fred. Hey, Sally. Look at you. You're yelling at each other. You used to be madly in love with each other, and now you're thinking about getting a divorce. What's going on, and what if? Sally is holding up a mirror to you, Fred. And Sally, what if Fred's holding up a mirror to you, and you were attracted to each other for this very specific work? It's not easy. Sometimes it's not fun.
Yeah.
But it's the work we came here to do. To grow spiritually, to grow emotionally, to develop things like emotional intelligence, and to get real. And real, by the time we're real, we've lost the judgment about what's bad, what's good, what's, you know, it's like the Rumi quote. We're in that field beyond right doing and wrong doing, to the point where everything that happens in my life, Clay, you walk in my front door and you start cursing me out, and my immediate thought is, I'm going to start cursing right back at you. What if I could actually be wise enough to say, wow, thank you, man. And by the way, did you know how handsome you are? I just saw your beauty for the first time, and I saw it. You had this like angry look on your face, but I've been practicing gratitude, and I'm actually getting a little better at it. And you came in and you really challenged me. And thank you, man. I didn't know I had to go there. So,
and that's your ability to show up wholehearted.
Wholehearted.
Not
easy. There you
go. Not easy. It's a practice. It's a
lot
of working this one.
Because the trigger, the trigger is our sign that it's our work to do. So the trigger is huge. So in that instance, he didn't trigger into reaction. He just went, "Oh, hey, Clay, you're looking great today. How are you? Welcome." You know, instead of triggering into defense and triggering into making you bad and wrong, you know, that whole dance,
And what you're talking about is being able to separate a fraction of a millisecond of the body fight or flight response and actually coming at it at a higher consciousness level.
From a higher frequency.
Higher frequency, right.
Right. So we have the ability to operate anywhere. There's a sliding scale all the way from infinitely high to infinitely low. We can be in the darkest hell of our choice. Mm-hmm. We have that freedom. We actually have the absolute freedom to be as miserable as we can imagine. We have that freedom. And to be as joyful as we can imagine. And it's a practice, too. When I'm not functioning the way I'd like to, when I'm not putting out into the world the beauty and the love that's in my heart that's hiding here because I'm afraid to do so. Maybe I was rejected at some point. And then through practice, so there's a certain amount of sort of intellectual understanding that's helpful. That's where our book is useful. These 10 assumptions for a new paradigm. We just took 10. There was something called the 10 commandments. And mm-hmm. said, well, how about the 10 assumptions?
Perfect.
Like, I asked this question. When was the last time somebody walked up to you on the street, a stranger, and said, excuse me, what are your 10 most fundamental beliefs? We don't do that in this culture. We don't do that, do we? I don't know a culture that does. I don't think the Tibetan Buddhists do that. I don't know. Yeah. So what if we could identify 10 assumptions, current assumptions, that are pretty foundational to most people in most cultures, and then flip them on the other side? I'm a science guy, so I was raised to believe that the universe is this big mechanical clockwork machine. It doesn't even know I exist. What's the total opposite of that? A conscious, loving universe, which totally, it doesn't just love me because that implies separation. Mm-hmm. I am it. It's me. I am a manifestation of the universe, and therefore I am that love, and I am so loved. It's almost like being in the womb of my mother. Life, I'm so protected, I'm so supported, I'm so loved. How different is that from thinking of the universe as a mechanical thing that doesn't know we exist?
Amen. I know. Amen. It is. Now, can you give us an idea of like what one of these assumptions is? You know, give us a peek inside here.
We could run down the whole 10 of them without too much trouble.
Well, we've spoken of there's only love. That's assumption number one. Uh-huh. We live in a conscious, loving universe. There is only love.
On a quantum level, it consists entirely of love. So we're not talking about holding hands here. We're talking about the primordial energy, the creative energy that has resulted in this glorious universe that we're a part of.
Yeah.
That energy is love with a capital L.
Exactly.
There's nothing else.
There is nothing else at all.
But people say that, but what about the stuff that we see as not love? See, we resolve that paradox.
So that's the next one.
But go on. Mm-hmm. Go on, Dennis. Yeah.
No, I want you to go on, Tony.
So the second assumption is the universe loves us unconditionally. It gives us everything we ask for. And then the third assumption is we create reality by the power of our consciousness. And then the fourth assumption is the 7 aspects of our consciousness that begin with A that are our requests to the conscious loving universe. They create our vibration.
Okay, so what are the 7 aspects of our consciousness?
Awareness.
Uh-huh.
Assumptions.
Attention.
Attitude. Alignment. Action.
And allowing.
And allowing.
Stepping back and trusting the universe that it's got our back.
So I can say those 7 aspects in one sentence.
The seven A's.
Please do.
There's the first 4 assumptions. And the fourth one is more of an invitation to understand consciousness by breaking it down into these 7 attributes or aspects. Starting with, you go to the dictionary. The only one in the dictionary is the word awareness. Mm-hmm. Here's a sentence.
Okay. So the sentence that has all seven aspects of our consciousness that create our vibrational level, and thereby our frequency, and thereby our reality, is this: with expanded awareness and accurate assumptions, we choose our attitude, consciously direct our attention, align with our highest inner promptings, take committed action, and allow the loving universe to manifest beyond our wildest dreams.
That's beautiful.
So this is like a toolkit that you can sort of say, okay, awareness, yeah, that's an active, am I awake? If I'm fast asleep or I'm drugged out, I'm not aware.
And what do we allow into our awareness?
And then where am I putting my attention? And what are my assumptions on the subject of where I'm putting my attention? If I'm watching the news and my assumption is that we're all screwed, you know, we're probably in trouble. Yep. If I know that something is going on that's on a higher level, that there's only love, therefore these scary things we see on the TV, for example, somehow have to be part of the unfolding of the conscious loving universe. That's not always easy to remember. But yeah. Once we remember that, yeah.
For me, my core assumption or my knowing is there is only the coming of peace on earth. Mm-hmm. Everything serves it, ever has, ever will. That's all there is. So that's my reality. So I ask, how does this serve the coming of peace on earth? The answers you get depend on the questions you ask. So, and those questions are based on your assumptions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I get radically different answers from people who think we're going to hell in a handbasket and it's all horrible and humanity's digressing, etc. I get totally different answers.
Exactly. And it feels to me, and we've talked about this with some of the other scientists and psychologists and anthropologists that we've talked to on the program about, it feels to me as if there is a shift in consciousness in the same way that must have happened when we went from the chimpanzee into the hominid. There, it feels like that we're making a shift, that there is a shift in consciousness that is happening, something that there's an impelling, an evolutionary imperative that is happening right now. It feels like it. Something feels different.
So what's different is we're conscious for the first time that we know of. Barbara Marx-Hubbard and her idea of conscious evolution. We are now aware that we're an evolving species. We ain't done yet. We still got work to do.
Yes.
Back when I was swinging through the trees and I flew down and jumped into my Ferrari and raced off across the prairie, I was not as conscious as I am now. I didn't know that that was a quantum leap in behavior.
Yes.
I shortened history a bit between the
tree. Hey, everybody, and the that's an assumption that we're descended from the apes. I'm sorry.
Exactly, and that's part of the assumption about how, because I assume that there is something other than the present moment. There isn't.
Right.
That's an assumption. That's something
that's
one of the assumptions.
That's our assumption number seven.
Number seven. What's that?
So, and that's there is only now this precious present moment.
There is only now this precious present moment. So pay attention.
So that's the gateway to the trust frequency.
Yeah.
And that's why we're losing our memory. Okay?
Yep.
Because if we can't remember what we're supposed to do tomorrow and we can't remember what we did yesterday, where are we?
Alzheimer's.
So I saw this long ago because I asked, okay, how is this going to happen in a loving way, this shift in consciousness, which is a given for us,
yeah,
that you mentioned. And my daughter was sitting at the kitchen counter. And I had asked this to the universe, right? My daughter's sitting at the kitchen counter. This was 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And she said, Mom, what would happen if everyone got amnesia? And I'm like, Allie, that's it. That's how it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I started watching people having senior moments, et cetera, you know, and I'm like, yay. And then the Men in Black came, you know, where they just went and zap and zapped memories. And then a little girl came over to play with my other daughter one day. And she said, Consi, do you know what happened? I was right in the middle of a fight with my mother and I forgot what I was mad about. And that told me that it had nothing to do with age. Okay. This is how I get my information about the nature of the universe. Okay. And when I get it like that, I know it's from the divine. I resonate to it. I put it in my worldview, and that's very totally real for me.
The present moment, the more that I get to it, I know that when I'm sitting in meditation and I really try to experience the present moment, and just that act of attempting to do it shows me how much I'm away from the present moment during the rest of my other activities. And so it's extraordinary work to do that, to be able to go into the practice of that.
But it's helping because we're losing our memory, right?
Well, I would think of the memories as a 55-gallon drum that, you know, it's like it gets filled up at the top and then everything else just spills over on the side.
I've got a question now.
Yeah.
My perception is that you're going to have the majority of the world thinking this way for change to happen. And how in the world?
It's called the 100th monkey.
Tell me about that.
You know about the 100th monkey.
Vaguely.
Well, when the consciousness reaches a certain level, the whole thing shifts. When the 100th monkey shifts, the whole monkey kingdom shifts.
So are you saying that it doesn't take the majority of the world to get to this consciousness level for change to happen? It can happen with a much smaller population?
So this is a subject that has actually been studied. Uh-huh. And the idea seems to be emerging that it's going to take a bunch of people, about 6%.
Six?
So a significant number, but not 50%, not 70%, not 100%. A small enough butterfly to have that butterfly effect on the rest of us.
But one thing we have to realize, see, with quantum science and the observer effect, we have to realize our responsibility to the collective consciousness. That if we see it, we sense it. It is our responsibility to vibrate at that level, to keep it in mind to the best of our ability, because like you said, Dennis, it's a process. But if we realize it's a responsibility we have, that we affect the collective consciousness. We are the loving universe. Everything we see, we think, we feel, our emotions, Nassim Haramein with unified physics is now proving that. You know, it has to do with the fact that the energy of the universe is in every cell of our body. So we're feeding every cell, every emotion, every vibration feeds all of creation. And we actually say all of creation is awaiting the love in the human heart, awaiting the opening of the human heart. That our work is actually transmuting fear, separation, and scarcity for all of creation.
That feels so good, because it feels so hopeful, because it also gives me my work to do, because I get to be totally responsible. I get to contribute to the collective conscience. I get to raise my awareness, raise my frequency in that, so that I can help. I mean, I'm very metaphorical. I'll take a good metaphor and ride it until it's in the ground and keep going with it. So I think of myself as getting an opportunity to be able to contribute into this raising of awareness that's happening all over the world. Like the internet is an artificial nodal net that connects the consciousnesses of people that is actually helping to be able to very quickly, like someone tomorrow, as soon as Clay gets this edited, can be in Mozambique and can listen to this conversation. Mm-hmm. How long would that have taken to happen 20 or 30 years ago?
Yeah, absolutely.
So what's inherent in what you were saying, Dennis, is that because I think we agreed early on that there's only one thing. We call it the universe. It's the only thing there is. There's nothing else.
The conscious, loving universe.
You can describe it. You can use the descriptors and so on. But the universe, sure. This universe, that which is, and there is nothing else. You can't leave. You can't escape. And we're all a deeply, profoundly entangled and interconnected part of that. Therefore, as you, Dennis, raise your vibratory frequency, guess what you're doing to the universe? You're raising the vibratory frequency of the entire universe and influencing every sentient being and every rock in that universe. It's amazing.
Boy, I want to add to that. Mm-hmm. First say amen. Dennis, remember something that Rick Tarnas shared with us.
Yep.
And it was from Plotinus, and it's so beautiful, and I think it speaks directly to what you're talking about. It says, the stars are like letters that inscribe themselves at every moment in the sky. Everything in the world is full of signs. All events are coordinated. All things depend on each other. Everything breathes together.
So beautiful.
There you go.
And that actually brings us into our sixth assumption.
That's 2,000 years ago. And yeah, there's a sixth assumption.
Our sixth assumption.
Which was written by Plotinus. He
there you go.
Did we ever get a check?
Circumstance guides us on our journey to wholeness. Circumstance loves us more than we do. Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people think they are victims of circumstance. We say, okay, what we're doing here is we're taking the opposite. What's the opposite of a victim? A beneficiary. We are beneficiaries of circumstance. So every time I get smacked upside the head with a 2x4 when I think I'm going from A to B and something comes out of left field and says, no, you're not. You're going over there. Again, I have to learn to be grateful, to know that I'm not a victim, that I'm a beneficiary. And thank you for redirecting me.
So we didn't look for the opposite of the prevailing paradigm, but it's a good tool for people to say, okay, what do I think? Let me try flipping it to the opposite.
We actually We started from the other end.
We came up with this construct.
We came up with the 10 assumptions and then said, well, okay, so what current, what is this, what people believe right now? No. So what do they believe? And we made a list of those 10.
But circumstance loves us more than we do because we're in this little box of this paradigm that says we're separate, that we're not okay, that it doesn't matter, nothing matters. And here we have this loving universe taking us on this journey that we agreed to go on, that we asked it to take us on. And we discover that every circumstance actually happens for us, not to us, and is taking us places we wouldn't have gone otherwise.
And I suspect you know that, right? So everything happens for us, not to us. If something's happening to me, that victim thought is in there, isn't it? But if it's happening for me, no matter how terrible it may appear on the surface, if everything is happening for me and I can truly trust that, wow, that's so liberating.
Yeah, and so there's two more assumptions. Is that correct?
Yes, there are. The ninth assumption, which is that humanity is on an evolutionary upward spiral.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because if we assume that, we see that, then the answers, all the answers are different from, oh, we're headed downhill, we've gone the wrong way, all that. So that's a really important one, that we're leading inexorably to peace on earth and heaven on earth.
And if that's, you remember what an assumption is, it's a belief, it's something we believe to be true without question. So you do not question an assumption. So if we're on this upward spiral, at times it's rocky, But on the whole, we're unfolding, we're blossoming, we're growing as a species.
Well, okay, so I want to peel the onion on that a little bit, because I spent most of my life thinking that time's linear, that, you know, we're going in a straight line out there.
Mm.
But when you talked about we're spiraling, then that gives I'm assuming then that time is cyclical, which is a big thing for someone to pick up if they've been on the linear path their whole life. But the Vedic texts talk about it, the precession of the equinox has it, all the ancient traditions have it, that it's time is cyclical.
Exactly. So it moves forward. It's teleological in the sense that it's going somewhere. Think about our sun and our solar system. It's going somewhere. It's traveling through the universe at a very high speed, and everything's revolving around everything else. So the whole thing's a convoluted spiral that's evolving, because it's different at different states and different times.
Right.
Yeah.
And we're coming around, but we're coming around at a higher place. It looks like history's repeating itself, but it's coming around at a higher level.
That's kind of the how spiral dynamics talks about it. Is that?
I think so. Yeah. I don't know enough.
Okay.
We don't know much about that. Right. It's very important thinking, but
yeah, it agrees with what you're saying.
Interesting. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, okay. So number 10. What's number 10?
Number 10 is the trust frequency is available to anyone, anytime, anywhere, and that it is a real place.
The trust frequency is real. In other words, this is not a fantasy. This is not just some made-up thing. There's a vibratory state of consciousness that's real, and we can go there anytime just by remembering that it's real.
And what can get us there? Our vibratory level, our 7 A's. Because it's a conscious, loving universe.
And I want to underscore that when you're talking about vibrational, you're not talking metaphor.
It's physics.
It's physics.
It's physics. It's vibration.
We touched on that a week or two ago with the research director for HeartMath Institute.
Yes.
Okay.
And what he's saying supports what you're saying. We're having so many people from the various vantage points pointing to this massive change that's happening. You know, it's not something out there that's happening. We're in the midst of all this. And whether it's psychological, physiological, vibrational, everybody's saying it differently, but they're saying the same thing, that we are evolving to a higher level, and that supports what you're saying.
A higher frequency. And Mr. Jeremy says that there's more information in higher frequency. So his science is proving what we're bringing through indigenous cosmology and quantum science synthesis. He's bringing through this unified physics. And he said, when we tune our antenna to a higher frequency, there's more information. What we say is the laws are expanded, and there's more beauty, balance, joy, and abundance than we can fathom. Because remember Jesus with the loaves and the fishes and the miracles. Okay, the loaves and the fishes, the unlimited abundance, that lives there. And John Lennon's Imagine, he's telling us how we get there and what it looks like. No possessions. The native people, you don't own anything. You don't own the land. I don't own this necklace, you know. If somebody likes my necklace, I realize it's their turn, and I give it to them in the native way. So it's a whole different reality in this higher frequency, and it's a whole new ballgame.
So would it be true?
Yes.
That I'm so busted.
I love your both of your comedy timings and your senses of humor are so delightful. Go, Clay.
All right. So would it be true that if we look at these 10 assumptions, that's a way to peel back the layers so that I can begin to know who I really am, why I'm really here, and then move forward with that, you know, alignment. You know, they talk about providence. Once one's committed, once one's aligned, and I've personally experienced that. And you're right, there's no straight lines to anything. But boy, I tell you, when I align with my true purpose, the whole universe aligned with me.
And guidance that's, shows up, yeah.
Yeah, and so that's what I'm seeing your 10 assumptions are, that that's helps peel back, helps reframe everything that allows that truth to come through.
Beautiful.
So I'd like to say something about human beings and assumptions. The vast majority of us, I would say all of us, have assumptions. I'm sitting on a chair. I have to assume this chair will support my weight. People say, don't make assumptions. It makes an ass out of you and me, right? Mm-hmm. A-S-U-M-E. No, we all make assumptions. They're our understanding of the nature of things, the nature of the universe. But our assumptions came to us in our pre-conscious years. Before the age of 7, before we got those teeth, before that analytical left brain really kicked in. So I was told at the age of 3 that I'm a little shit, just to take one of those things right. as an example. And I was also told when I was 5 that those, see those people down there, the ones with the black skins, they're dangerous. Yep. And, oh, by the way, you know, there's not enough, and we're never going to have enough food, and we're never going to have enough money, and we can never afford another house or any, on and on. All of that stuff comes to us as little children from our parents, from our teachers, from our buddies, from our ministers.
Then the culture, and then the school system.
Baked in cultural assumptions. And if we could be pygmies sitting in the African jungle, and there would be some equivalent of that. It Absolutely. Would have a different outward form. But I think every culture sort of impregnates the next generation with these fundamental beliefs. That is the worldview of that culture. And if whoever stops to think and says, wait a minute, where did I get that from? Do I really believe that? And can I rethink that? Is it possible that I can actually bring them to the surface, look at them, say, hell no, I don't believe that. Where'd you get it from? Oh, my dad told me that. Uh-huh. Or my grandfather, on and on. So that's what this work is about. The trust frequency work is about examining assumptions and basically being asked to just try on us an alternative set. And if it doesn't fit, make up some of your own.
Well, so many people say, this book, these assumptions articulate something I've always known, but never had the words for.
Mm.
Okay, because it is our true nature. We would go to say, perhaps it's the true nature of the universe, but we're not going to say that. That's dogma. One has to decide for oneself what one's assumptions are and what's relevant for one. But the one important thing is to understand there's no shame, no blame for having come in on this journey. Okay, so one's not less than because one came in with self-doubt and self-hatred and brought all this challenge and abuse and whatever into our lives. No, there's no, it's the job we came here to do. So, and the universe has blessed us with it, so that we can bring our true gift, which is us. The universe wants us, all of us.
Wow. I'm my head's spinning. And what came to mind a few moments ago as you were talking was this idea of fear. And the question, I've never thought about it, but is fear part of our DNA or is fear learned?
False evidence appearing real. Fear, F-E-A-R.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. But that, I think your point is it baked in? Is it in our DNA? And I would say the answer to that is yes, in that we, as we said earlier on, all of my predecessors are understanding holders. So everything they believed and experienced and understood from those experiences that were dangerous or scary or unpleasant, whatever they were, those things which we would fear as opposed to loving, you know, I don't welcome pain or disease. But those things that we might be afraid of, I think it's twofold. One is we were taught very intentionally to fear certain things as children. Like, I grew up in Africa. That snake, if it bites you, you're gone.
Yeah, so survival.
So there are certain survival things that are practical, sensible things. Don't just sit down and meditate in the middle of the freeway. Not a good idea.
Okay, so bingo. For me, I'm thinking that, yes, fear is part of my DNA. And when I'm born, it only manifests really when it's reinforced. I don't know if I'm saying it right. What I'm trying to do is make a correlation between, is fear is part of our DNA? Well, James Doty and his work with on compassion says that compassion is part of our DNA. And it's innate.
And trust is, and we know that if there's nothing in the universe but love, then love is obviously part of our DNA, because our DNA is actually made of love. But it's that freedom that we somehow have been given, if we put it that way. I was given the freedom to believe anything I choose, and actually the job of figuring it out. And I was told stuff by my culture. And as I grow up, a lot of us as teenagers, we rebel, don't we? We go, wait a minute, shut up, Dad. I'm not going to do that. What are you talking about? So there's all of that. We all come from a certain era in the 60s where our whole generation rose up and basically rejected some of the fundamental assumptions of the collective culture.
So free will, which is our fifth assumption, is an absolute law of the universe.
This
construct,
there's no such thing as no free will. We
have the freedom to choose our frequency.
That's a big responsibility.
Right there. See, freedom to choose our frequency. We can say, no, I don't believe in all that. That's fine. We have the freedom to choose our assumptions, to choose where we put our attention, to choose all this stuff.
If that were not true, Connie, then when someone cuts me off on the freeway on a Thursday, I would react exactly the same way as I do on a Friday. Because on a Thursday, I'm all mad and pissed off and angry at that person. On a Friday, they do exactly the same thing. And I'm, they're having a hard time and let me get in there. The exact same thing happened, but I'm the one.
See the choice? See the choice?
Yeah.
See, life is just an endless sequence of choices, of conscious, intentions.
And I say to people, people say, you're trying to change me. No, I'm not trying to change you. I'm telling you a set of assumptions. I don't care what you do with them. That's your choice.
Exactly.
It's up to you completely. We're offering this set of assumptions and this book and our who we are and our worldview. But I don't care what you think or what you do. That's your business. It's totally free will.
What feels so good about this is that this is the definition of living it. When we say it's a program of attraction and not promotion, that this is what you're offering me. You're offering me an opportunity to be able to say, search inside myself, look into who I am, and how's that working for you, Dennis?
And it's hell, isn't it?
Wouldn't you rather be beloved from a victim?
I know that. I know that because I look into my own resentments toward myself, and I wonder, well, I must be getting something from that. What am I getting from holding that against myself? I must be finding something, either some need to stay small or something that I'm doing that I'm holding against myself to be able to do that.
The men's work that I've done, that I can't see the perfect person that I am, that the universe has given me. And that's where the men who surround me remind me who I am. And I bring that up because we're going to get together again.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about men's work. And so I just wanted to put that in there. But what you were saying really brought that out in my mind.
I'm so happy that we get a chance to have another conversation with you both on the, not only on this subject, because my sense is that it's going to be iterative, and that we're actually going to be using many of the principles that you're talking, all of the principles that you're talking about in our next discussion. But it'll just have a different cosmetic face, but it'll be the same essence of what we're talking about.
Or a different application.
Different application of that. Thank you.
I wanted not to lose one thing from what
you said. Yeah, please.
You talked about your resentment toward yourself. So this is foundational. We have these beliefs about ourselves that were baked in when we were little boys. And our self-esteem, our love for ourselves is the hardest thing. It's kind of easy for me to love this girl. I mean, who wouldn't?
Who wouldn't? Good God.
and my little grandchildren, you know, I mean, that's relatively easy. But look in the mirror and face myself. Oh, man. So one of the most challenging things is actually our self-respect, our self-esteem, our self-love. And trusting these 10 assumptions actually help a whole lot. They're each fragments of a mirror that adds up to a very beautiful reflection of ourselves as magnificent, as beautiful, as useful, as here with a purpose. All of those things that really help me personally. My hardest thing for decades was to learn that I was lovable. I actually didn't believe I was lovable. And man, that was hard. And I did a lot of Ben's work myself, Clay, so we'll talk about that.
Yeah, and I just want to say, back along in the conversation, the idea that a reaction and a behavior has to do with core issues. Somebody brought that up to us decades ago when we had a thing right before this person came to see us. And she said, whoa. That sounds like a core issue situation. And that just took it right there, right to what's going on. I mean, that observation of hers changed our lives right there. A core issue.
When you see these inexplicable behaviors emerge. Yeah.
Thank you. Clay. Thank you for inviting me on this journey, and thank you for inviting me to this conversation. And Connie, y'all, thank you so much for this time, and thank you for knowing that we're going to be having another conversation with you, and I knowing that it's already scheduled makes me very happy. And thank you both. Clay, thank you so much. And thank you everyone who is listening out there, and please join us again for In Search of the New Compassionate Male.
And that has been an honor. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Check out the latest episode of In Search of the New Compassionate Male on your favorite podcast station.